This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's a beautiful Friday morning edition of VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross right here at the Mint Gaming Hall in Franklin, Kentucky. He's our closer, Jensen Lewis, back home in Cleveland, Ohio. We're getting ready. We're in the spirits. We're ready for the 4th of July to celebrate our 250th year of independence. Jensen, what are you rocking, sir? That is sweet. Is that a soccer kit from what year?
Yeah, this is, I can't believe it still fits, 2015 road kit for the men's national team. Back in my pre- and post-game days for Fox Sports, doing the Indians before and after games coverage, they sent it to us to obviously do the on-air promos. And I not to say that I'm not svelte right now, Dave, as I'm sure the Ready, Set, Bet guys will find out if Dana White wants to book that MMA card. It was one of those things you look in the closet. I'm like, I think this could still fit. So, we're nice and snug, but we're in good shape. And, hey, red, white, and blue all day, baby. Can't wait for Monday night football next week. Going to be a lot of fun.
It still looks good on you, my man. It's you're still rocking it well in 2026. I'll say that. We got a great show lined up here on this Friday as we cannot wait for the weekend. Obviously, the 4th of July, and as you mentioned on Monday, Malcolm Bamford's going to join us here in this hour from the Sports Gambling Podcast Network to break down everything that we might see on the pitch today. Some actionable spots there. Tommy Smith, an absolute legend, talking some football from across the big pond. I cannot wait to have Tommy on the program as well. Jim Duquette, former Major League Baseball GM, is going to be on the program as well, as we're getting really, really close to the halfway point here of Major League Baseball season. And James Webb is going to be on the program. Well, who is that? Well, number 4 in the Major League Eating World Rankings. We got a little hot dog eating contest that people might be aware of that's going to happen this weekend as well. So can't wait to catch up and have some fun with James later on in the program. But we keep moving on to the round of 16. Who got it done yesterday? That's where we begin our highlights and headlines.
Help your bottom line with today's highlights and headlines.
Jensen, Portugal, Spain, and Switzerland. A lot of red on that board if you're watching here on FanDuel Sports Network, YouTube TV this morning. Those three all punched their tickets to the round of 16. I don't think there's any shock there, but maybe Spain starting to look like a heavyweight that we all thought they'd be before this tournament began.
Oh, man, La Roja continues to be incredibly defiant in conceding goals. A very convincing 3-0 victory. Congratulations, everyone who tailed some of my best bets in that one. Portugal got pushed to extra time there, but they end up getting it across. And, boy, another controversial VAR call that took away a goal that would have been the equalizer for Croatia. Another offside it's a game of inches, and Portugal fortunate to be able to get that one across, and the Swiss, no problem taking care of Algeria. So today, Dave, the final round of 32, if you will, and we will have those round of 16 matches all set. A very big heavy favorite, no shock here, Argentina against Cape Verde. Australia and Egypt, maybe a tenuous match, and then Colombia and Ghana. A lot of people looking at Colombia potentially as an upset candidate, not only through to the round of 16, but maybe if they were to meet Argentina in the quarterfinals. So we'll wrap it all up today, and then we start round of 16, baby, tomorrow on the 4th of July.
I'm a little surprised this morning here, Jensen, when I checked the numbers, that Spain hasn't really been adjusted that much. Again, expected to win, but I thought, you know, putting on a performance like that, maybe the markets will really readjust a little bit. Still plus 560 here for Spain to get it done. France gets shorter and shorter, plus $1.80 right now to win the World Cup. We'll talk more about that later on with Malcolm coming up here in this very hour. We got to dole out some suspensions here in Major League Baseball. Cade Cavalli and now Wilson Contreras. Boy, it seems like Contreras always got something to say to somebody these days. They're both going to get 7-game suspensions. That is highlighted by their little scuffle. And then we'll get to Chase Burns and Jacob Mizrowski yesterday in Milwaukee. But what'd you make of that? 7 games here for these guys. And, again, I'm not saying Contreras is initiating these things, but he does seem to be in the middle of a lot of things these days.
So if we just qualify this for a moment, and speaking with some people close to the situation in Boston, for those that have not seen what has happened around the world, the devastating earthquake in Venezuela, where Wilson Contreras is a native son, he has been incredibly shaken with what has happened on his native soil. And people close to that entire ball club have said it. He's really struggled with trying to deal with it. And who wouldn't, Dave? I mean, for God's sake, if it happened where our friends and family were affected and loved ones, you of course would have your mind elsewhere. As it pertains to this on-field incident, I think it's a bit heavy on Cade Cavalli. He didn't throw at Wilson Contreras. All he said was sit down, boy, at least from what we heard on the audio. And then, you know, rules of engagement, right? Do not fire until fired upon. I guess Wilson Contreras thought that that was the time to engage. I thought that he should have the heaviest of suspensions. If you want to suspend Cavalli for 3 or 4, it's up to you. I would fully expect appeals for both these guys. I would think Cavalli gets his reduced. I don't know if Contreras will get his. But you mentioned Chase Burns, Jacob Mizrowski. I told you yesterday I wanted to wait for lineups to come out. That line had fluctuated between 7, 6.5, and then back up to 7. I ended up taking a shot on the under 7. And Dave, it was a homer parade against Jacob Mizrowski. I'll get more into what happened yesterday in Daily Diamond. But credit the Reds. They avoid the 4-game sweep. And Jacob Mizrowski, there's going to be some change in the National League Cy Young market once we revisit that later on today.
Yeah, that's a bit of a surprising result with the Reds getting that 7-2 win. Not so much getting the win, but the manner in which they got that win. I know you like Chase Burns a lot, and another good outing for him. We talked about yesterday with Jonathan Davis right here on VSiN by the Books, and we asked about Alex Ovechkin, and you know, I thought there's no way he can't come back, right, for one more, and JD's like, nah, he's coming back. Yeah, he is. He's, in fact, coming back. It's going to be his 22nd year. Jensen, I'm starting to feel my age because I covered him as a rookie. Now it's just going to be a one-year deal with the Caps. And I don't know if this will, in fact, be the end for the Great Eight, but what a run it's been in D.C. A lot of guys don't get to play 22 years with the same club that they came in with. Jensen, you talk about the pillars in Washington, D.C. I don't know if they're going to build a statue for Alex, but it's been an absolutely incredible run, and he's got one more year here. And Jonathan Davis likes their chances to really have a great last year for the Great Eight.
Yeah, great time to reinforce it. If you are not liking and following the By the Books podcast, a great, great opportunity to do that. JD in earnest, really unveiling a solid breakdown of what the offseason has been for the Caps to this point. Very much likes their Eastern Conference price. Their Stanley Cup price right now, Dave, still at 20-1. This is screaming to me a potential cross-board parlay with something in baseball or in golf to maybe get that north of 30-1. But hey, JD had said it yesterday, should this transpire, then this would be pretty advantageous. Team friendly, Dave, this contract for the Great Eight to come back, but an Eastern Conference that's going to find a lot of suitors, especially with the Carolina Hurricanes now as the defending Stanley Cup champions.
And again, he will be the sentimental choice, that's for sure. Can't wait to see him on that left side of that power play in that circle as he's done for 21 years to do it for at least one more. Tari Eason's going to be staying with the Rockets, 5-year, $81.5 million deal there in H-Town. And Billy the Kid, way back in his playing days, now a great coach these days from college, now, of course, in the NBA, is going to be joining the Spurs staff, which is interesting. So, you know, Billy Donovan, you would think he'd probably get a big high-profile job back in college if he wanted. Certainly had those in the NBA, but he's just going to be on the staff in San Antonio. What do you make of these moves out west, one on the court and one off it?
Yeah, not really much to make of it other than Mitch Johnson trying to get some help in making in-game decisions. We know that he had some issues there in the NBA Finals as he went through. But again, Dave, you and I just need to be a role player for the NBA and get paid obscene amounts of money. It is always ridiculous to me this time of year to see some of these guys and get the contracts that they do. Congratulations to them. We say it all the time in our business. We want every person to get as high a raise as possible. A rising tide lifts all boats. That's great for the marketplace, and I'm sure the Players Association very happy with some of these free agent contracts thus far.
My takeaway was I just hope that was Mitch Johnson's hire and not the Spurs hire. And say, hey, Mitch, you better be calling these, because we'd have somebody in place in case those in-game decisions don't go as well as they did in the NBA Finals. We've got two tied at the top here at the first round of the JDC. Lucas Glover. How about Lucas yesterday? And Zach Blair. I said this. Somebody said to me they did have Lucas Glover, first-round leader. I still haven't seen the ticket, Jensen. So if you're out there, we'd like to see those tickets. Great tickets that you had yesterday. 8 under par there. My two to watch. Jackson Suber, solid day, 3 under par. Danny McCarthy, I need you to do some work, even par. But we did hit our under props yesterday, Jensen, that we had on the program before the show started. And a good day overall, but you got to go low today. The course is there for the getting.
Yeah, I was happy with Chris Goddard up one of the outrights I had there. A very strong 5 under, tied for the ninth there, just 3 shots behind. You mentioned Little Denny. Let's go. The tournament did start yesterday, pal, so let's quit dilly-dallying. Pearson Cootie out early, but I liked his game. Michael Thorbjornsson, also one of those longer shots that we liked there. So anxious to see course-wise. Did you take anything away? I know you nailed both the unders for those round props yesterday. Did you take anything away from what you saw course-wise and how everything was playing?
Surprisingly, the course did play, I mean, by the waves. It did play harder in the afternoon. A little bit of wind came up there, but it wasn't. It was more because it got baked out because it's so hot that the greens were not running the way they were in the morning. So I would look for a lot of those guys that we mentioned, hopefully the Denny McCarthys of the world, Jackson Subers of the world. The guys that went out late are going to go out early this morning. So they should have even more favorable conditions. But again, if you're in the afternoon wave as well, it's there for the taking. So I would expect, guys, if you're looking at guys to get in those top 20, we'll talk about some specific markets here. You're going to be looking at 5-6 unders today to keep pace with the rest of a very packed pack. All right, when we come back, let's talk some more World Cup here, what we saw yesterday, what we might see over the weekend. That's all next right here on VSiN by the Books. So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match it. Here's the thing. Pro bettors, they spend thousands on data and tools. But what they don't know and don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you're going to get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and so much more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
We're pretty pumped up for the 4th of July, and this 4th of July, we're doing something here at the network we rarely do. How about this? A multi-year VSiN Pro subscription for 1 week only. You can get 2 years of VSiN Pro for just $299. So that's access through July 2028 at nearly 70% off the regular monthly price. You're going to get our NFL betting guides every year, daily best bets, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, AI-powered prop projections, 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app, and every betting guide, season preview, VSiN Pro feature we release over the next 2 years. Do not wait. This is a special 4th of July offer, and it will disappear after the weekend, people. On July 7th, it's over. So head over to VSiN.com/subscribe right now. Lock in 2 years of VSiN Pro for just $299. That's VSiN.com/subscribe. Jensen, pretty great offer there. Should be a pretty great weekend in sports as well. Obviously, it's so cool to see the way the country is really gravitated towards this World Cup. Obviously, us being Americans, we're excited about our team playing on Monday night against Belgium. But we did have 3 matches yesterday. Spain 3-0 over Austria. Portugal gets by Croatia 2-1. Switzerland over Algeria 2-0. So I think the first and third result, not a huge surprise here. But Portugal, you mentioned the controversy there. And I have seen a lot of consternation since Germany's VAR goal was taken away. The red card heard around the World Cup here with Team US of A. And I have seen a lot of people say, you know, this is part of the reason why, at least in America, we get frustrated with soccer on the world stage. Look, our NFL product, we got issues too with replay, okay? We're not saying that ours is perfect here. But I can understand why some people go, man, wait, you've got review. You've got VAR. Like, get it right. I think that's only the only hang-up so far in this World Cup would be that we want what's fair is fair. And sometimes when you watch this stuff, you go, what are they seeing that we're not seeing?
Yeah, Gvardiol there for Croatia had thought he had the equalizer in the 12th minute of time that was added on there for extra time. But the referee ruled that Matanovic had this. I love the description in these articles, Dave. The faintest of flicks before the ball found its way to Pasalic in an offside position. So again, VAR determining that goal disallowed because of the offside from Croatia. But Dave, listen, they were up in the 53rd minute there. They took the lead. And then Cristiano Ronaldo gets the equalizer on a penalty before the extra time there with Ramos being able to put them ahead for good. Drama of the highest order there. North of the border. So Portugal survive, they move on, and we get one of the heavyweight matchups that we kind of saw once the bracket was finalized here for the knockout stage. You will have, Portugal, Spain right now, July 6th, that at 3 p.m. And of course, that is going to be the same day on Monday that we have the U.S. and Belgium. So we will understand and know who the potential quarterfinal match could be should U.S., the United States move on. I would also say now, looking at where that top part of the bracket is finalized, and it has been for a little bit, France is decided favorites against Paraguay. No shock there. We talked about the risk board for those that have played that game in the past, where we, from a futures perspective, wanted to try and maybe get three quarters of the board and surround it. We're in a really good spot here with our cross-board parlay of France to win the cup and the Rays to win the World Series. We've got an investment now on Le Bleu. And we also have the 60-1 future on Morocco alive against Canada. And they will be favorites in that match tomorrow at 1 p.m. I decided that Spain was also going to be a cross-sport parlay that I did add. So I had Spain to win the World Cup parlay with the Phillies to win the World Series. So they were pretty set already with our pre-tournament future on Portugal at plus 850. We're going to get one of those through there on Monday afternoon. And then, of course, the United States, 35-1 in pocket there against Belgium. We could be set up really, really well for that top part of the bracket, at least getting a very sizable future into the semifinals. So very excited to see what happens there beginning tomorrow for the round of 16 matches to get underway.
Again, we're going to have Malcolm Bamford on here a little bit later on this hour. We'll talk about the three specific matches today, see if we can find some value in there. But again, even as we were discussing with our jefe here, Steve Cohen, you know, you get four goals taken off the board here in this World Cup, and you kind of go, man, what we want to enjoy this thing. We want to get fired up. And again, we're not saying good call, bad call, what have you. It would appear some of these seem pretty obvious bad calls that we're seeing out there, at least disputed calls, certainly if you're Germany, or yesterday as well, if you're Croatia, to say, man, oh, man, why are you guys taking this stuff away from us here? When I look at Spain, and I love that you have them in a cross-board parlay, is there something that I'm missing here that they're still close to 6-1 betting? One of the smaller short shots on the board, but at the beginning of the term, they were actually a little bit shorter than this. And it feels like, is it just the pathway, Jensen, that people think is too daunting versus France, and that's why France is so short and Spain is still a decent number on them?
For sure. Look, the road is what it is. You have, the current European champions right now in Spain, and their defense is absolutely stellar. Portugal have had to kind of figure it out. Remember, there's all the consternation with Ronaldo. And remember, early in group play, there's a lot of talk like, I mean, do we need to make a decision instead of kind of playing fancy, if you will, with one of the international stars of a generation? We're here to win. And so do you have to make the tough decision of maybe altering that starting 11? You are correct, Dave. And why the number for Spain has lengthened a little bit, it is the path. And make no mistake about it, Portugal is going to be a handful for them, especially knowing that they are neighbors. Can you imagine if we were there in Madrid watching that one? Wow, what atmosphere that's going to be. That'll be prime time on Monday. Again, that's, 5-6 hours ahead over there. So that's 8-9 local time for them. I would say, though, that looking at the bottom of the bracket for people, if they haven't gotten invested just yet, remember I told you that, hey, we've had some amazing Sunday night football week one, you know, openers with Ravens, Bills, you know, Chiefs there in prime condition. What you're about to watch with Mexico and England at 8 o'clock Eastern on Sunday night is the equivalent of likely a conference championship NFL matchup. The way that both these fan bases are, and knowing the dominance, the home field advantage that Mexico have had at Estadio Azteca, I saw Harry Kane say, like, they know that the altitude is going to be a problem, and they've already said they're not going to have a chance to kind of get acclimated to it. That is a massive part of the handicap, and they have looked dreadful throughout this run here. So speaking of futures, I am thrilled that I have Mexico at 50-1, and they're down to 27-1 right now, level with the Americans. This could be a very intriguing bottom part of the bracket now, knowing that winner of Mexico-England has the winner of Brazil-Norway. And that one, Brazil-Norway, is going to feel like watching Seahawks-Rams from last year. That's my best comp. You're going to see goals. You're going to see transition, counter, numbers forward. We are in for a heck of a Sunday of international football compared to what you and I watch in the fall and the wintertime in the National Football League.
Not only Malcolm coming up a little bit later on this hour, Tommy Smith, the legend himself, is going to join the program. So we have a lot more World Cup here on the way. But speaking of futures, we see that the 76ers futures in the NBA have really been knocked down here, obviously, making the big moves that they have made here. You go out and you get Brown from Boston. But now, could they get the King out of L.A.? Because we know he's leaving from L.A. Here's Nick Whalen on Prop Points. And Nick, talking about the futures market here, should we think about investing in Philadelphia?
The Sixers were hanging around 100-1 to win the NBA title prior to this deal. Now down to 22-1. And look, Jeff, not only did the Sixers' NBA championship odds make a big leap, and rightfully so, so did their odds to land LeBron James. Philly has now entered this mix. They're 7-1. Meanwhile, we've seen the Cavs surpass the Golden State Warriors as the betting favorites to land LeBron. This is a little bit secondary to the trade. Narrative-wise, it would be a tough one, I think. You know, maybe LeBron just loves the city of Philadelphia. I'd have to look into what the golf course situation is around Philly, what the indoor golf situation is in the winter. But this would be 100% chasing a ring if he's teaming up with now Embiid, Maxey, Edgecombe, and Jaylen Brown.
I don't know about the golf. Aronimic, it's not too far away if LeBron wants to be a member there. But very quickly here, Jensen, when we're talking about that with Nick, I'm picking up what he's putting down. I'm not going to get mad at LeBron if he wants to chase a ring at this stage, right? We don't know if this is going to be the last year. That would be an interesting match there in Philadelphia. Do you think it makes sense?
Boy, that's a lot of personalities, man. That's a lot of mouths to feed.
Oh, boy.
How do you ask LeBron to be the fourth option? Because that's what he'd be. I mean, you're essentially asking him to be a glorified facilitator, and I have yet to see LeBron, you know, kind of defer, if you will, willingly. So we'll see. 20-1, Sixers are right now to win it all. So very interesting future spot for sure.
I remember the last super team they got in Philadelphia. Vince Young said they were super. It didn't work out very well for those Eagles. I don't know if it'd work out for the 76ers. Let's talk more football. Talk about those 49ers next right here on VSiN by the Books.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
Bamford's going to join the program in the very next segment. Talk all things World Cup with three big matches on the way today. Get his expert analysis on some plays and actionable spots there. But Jensen, we're very excited. We continue our countdown to Canton, Ohio, getting ready for our American football in today's edition of the Daily Gridiron.
This is the Daily Gridiron.
Such an intriguing team that we're going to talk about today with a very high win total of 10.5. You want to lay $1.56 to make the playoffs on this team? Yeah, you probably could understand why. How about to win the West at plus 290? and the win the NFC at 8-1 or the Super Bowl at 16-1. Who am I talking about if you're watching on FanDuel Sports Network or on YouTube TV? It's the San Francisco 49ers with those numbers attached on your screen, Jensen. Look, I get it. The respect level, this, again, how many times do I talk about quarterback, head coach? Do you trust him? And if you do, it's normally a good place to start in the futures market. Kyle Shanahan is a very trustable head coach. I think the stigma with Brock Purdy being Mr. Irrelevant is long gone these days. I don't think anybody else thinks about him in that context anymore. There's nothing else to prove there. Defensively, I think is maybe where we start with the issues on this football team. But offensively, Jensen, I guess if you can keep CMC healthy again, do you trust the brain trust and that they'll figure out the wide receiver position and get enough weapons for Brock Purdy to have another efficient offense?
Well, pretty good start when you bring in the surefire Hall of Famer, Mike Evans. That's going to make a big splash, that's for sure. You get Christian Kirk, who can probably be in that slot veteran guy on a one-year deal. Mentioned the defense, Dre Greenlaw there after your year with Denver reunites with his old running mate in Fred Warner. So that was a nice addition for them. I'm with you on the injury front. We are going to really get in, at least with the first handful of weeks in the schedule, a very, very good look at not only where this defense and right out of the chute in Australia against the LA Rams there, and then coming back stateside, Dave, it would feel pretty smooth sailing at home against the Dolphins and at home against the Cardinals. And then we get into a little thick of things with Denver and then up to the Pacific Northwest against Seattle. So in my eyes, Dave, a pretty favorable start, and I can understand why people would want to look at that over. This has been a common refrain. You hit the major theme. Can you keep the primary weapons healthy? And will, it feels like lightning has struck back-to-back years. Will it happen a third time? And even at the quarterback position, right? You know, this is a thing that we talk about. You sign backup quarterbacks to get you maybe 2-3 games where you can win and be competitive to kind of hold the line. This is just a division that I think is so brutally tough. And I think that they're going to, at least with the way that the divisional games are spaced out, they don't have a serious gauntlet to overcome. If I were to ask you, glass half full look, what would optimize your outlook for this team, knowing the division they play in, knowing the road that they have in front of them from a health history standpoint the last couple of years? What would give you the most optimistic outlook of what they have currently constructed and why you'd want to buy stock in this team?
A time machine? Like if you can make Trent Williams 27 instead of 37, if you could make Mike Evans 22 instead of 32, like that's the only thing that worries me about some of the guy, Kyle Juszczyk's 35, right? Like that you're still playing at football. Like these are not good players. These are great players. And to your point, Jensen, Trent Williams is going to go to the Hall of Fame, I do believe, right? Mm-hmm. I think CMC is probably headed for Canton one day. Mike Evans is going to go to the Hall of Fame. These are great resume players that they have. My concern is kind of like we talked about in the NBA, if the Warriors are going to put together this geriatric all-star team, that's what I kind of see with the Niners. I love these guys. I mean, you know, like they don't get a whole lot better over the course of their careers. But I just worry at this stage when all these guys, or at least the majority of these guys you're counting on, are north of 30 that we're looking at outside of Brock Purdy, obviously. He's still young and in his 20s. But like everybody else, that to me is the issue. We're talking about those guys on defense, like the Greenlaws and the Warners. And what have they not been able to do lately? Stay healthy. So we're counting on guys at premium positions here, defensively and offensively, to say that we can get 14 of 17 weeks out of these guys, and then hopefully they're all healthy at the end of the year when you need them most in the postseason. We saw them physically wear out last year at the end of the year, and that's why Seattle was able to beat them in that all-important last game of the regular season. And it really kind of flipped what the Niners had to do and gave Seattle home field advantage throughout the playoffs. That was so massive. Can I blame that all on age? Probably. I mean, the Niners just weren't healthy. They were a mass unit at the end of the year. So, on paper, I love the roster construction as to what John Lynch has done. I love Kyle Shanahan, okay? I'm in the tank for the Shanahans. As you know, I covered his dad when Kyle was just an OC back in the day with Sean McVay. Nobody knew who those guys were back in D.C., and we've seen what those guys have become. Proof's in the pudding with those guys. So I trust the brain trust of what they have there, Jensen. I think the only thing, the real only red flag that I see with this team is Father Time. And I just wonder, can they really stay healthy when you need them the most? It's a really good football team on paper. I am not willing to play the over 10.5, even though if you guaranteed me the health, then yes, they would get over 10.5 wins without question. So the question that I have is, can they really in the NFL play 17 weeks of relatively healthy football? You need some good luck along the way. You got to manage these guys properly too. I don't know what that looks like as well, but Jensen, that's my biggest red flag with the Niners.
This is a prime team, Dave, for alternate totals. I think once we get through the first six weeks of the season. So again, just to recap for people that are listening, Sirius Channel 158 on Sirius XM, you have the Rams in Australia. Then you have three home games, Miami, Arizona, Denver, quick hop up to Seattle, then back home against the Commanders. The finish to their schedule, if they're like middling, if they're at 500 and they've had injury issues, this might be a prime live bet the under win total spot. Look at the finish in December, home against the Rams. Then, you know, basically you stay in LA and you're going to go play the Chargers. Then you have to go to Arrowhead, and God knows what it's going to be like at the end of December there for Patrick Mahomes and company. Then you're home against Philly. That could be for playoff positioning for Philadelphia. And then who knows if week 18 is going to matter on the road against Arizona. That is not ideal, all right? And if you want to back it up even further, how about finishing November with Seattle? Then you got to come all the way east to the Meadowlands to take on John Harbaugh's Giants. And if they are competitive up to that point, oh, man, that is a tough spot. I'm with you. I can't play an over 10.5. I would be willing to take a shot on a 9.5. I don't know what those are going to be juiced. So shop around to see where those totals, if available, are. Okay, I've asked you this every time. From a survivor standpoint, would you want to burn this team early, just knowing we've had the injury issues and you have no clue, you know, what to expect? Yes. Like, it feels to me, if you're going to use the Niners, you use them within the first 3 weeks. It's either Miami or Arizona, brother, and get out of Dodge.
I could not agree more. I was just going to say that's exactly the assessment. If you're in Survivor this year, whatever your Survivor-esque league is, and it's a one-and-done league, this is an early football team for me. I'm right there with you. If you want to burn them, I know divisional rivals can be dicey. And by the way, this is a team that burned me last year. Like, think about it. Remember all those backups they had on Thursday night against the Rams, and they went in there and somehow beat the Rams? Like, that's how good this team can be, even with backups at times. So I get it. They're pretty. They showed some depth last year, but again, the erosion at the end of the year. I'm with you, Jensen. To me, this is week three at home against Carl. Hey, if you want to burn them week two against the Dolphins, I know it's super early, but I can understand that. If you want to take a shot, week six, it's a Monday night primetime. I know these can get a little bit dicey sometimes with the Commanders coming into town. That might be a look as well. But past that, if you really want to roll the dice, you could wait for the Raiders. Get that kind of, I don't know, you get that California-Vegas thing going there. I don't know if that's a big rivalry these days, but maybe that'd be the last spot if I really wanted to wait, because I'm with you, man. You get to the right side of that ledger. Once you get into double digits in the weeks, I think it's going to get really tough sledding for the Niners to close this thing out. And I got to say, like, no disrespect to them. As I mentioned, I just gave them a lot of respect with their hierarchy and their brain trust. But, Jensen, to me, they're kind of third in this division. Like, the Rams are the Rams. They're the betting favorite, the short shots here at plus 550 to win the Super Bowl. And the reigning defendings are right there, and I don't see them taking a step back. So I get it. They're very good. But out of those big three, I do make them the third of those big three.
Yeah, it feels like a Super Bowl or bust roster. Some guys right at the end of some prime spots. For what it's worth, Dave, Crossboard Parlay, 76ers are all in right now. For the NBA Finals, parlay with the Niners to win the Super Bowl, 419-1.
Don't hate it, because I think you're right. This might be the last hurrah for a lot of those guys in the Bay. You're watching By the Books on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
We continue VSiN by the Books on this Friday morning. Dave Ross, Jensen Lewis here with you. Very excited to have our next guest join the program here on the Progressive Guest Line. Malcolm Bamford does a great job. Sports Gambling Podcast Network Analyst. Give him a follow on X at @Mal_B_Sport. And Malcolm, it's been fantastic talking soccer as much as we've done. We'll be honest here on this show and certainly in the United States. This World Cup has been absolutely enthralling, not just because of the United States with a better showing, but I think for some of us, we're kind of having our eyes open a little bit to some of you guys that have been watching this for decades. They're like, hey, welcome to the party, pal, at VAR and the other things here, Malcolm. I think the American fan base is getting a real-time indoctrination.
It's high speed as well. Like the last four nights, it's almost been like a TED talk on what can possibly go wrong with referees in VAR. It is odd to see the reaction because we've been subjected to it for 5 or 6 years now. So our response to the last few nights is just a shrug of the shoulders because they've all been very commonplace things. The Balogun sending off was horrible, but we've seen it before. The Senegal penalty was horrible. We've seen it before. The offsides, particularly the Croatian goal that was disallowed for offside, wasn't really a thing. But then because there's been a lot of casual supporters, our show's got a lot of new casual supporters, our network, the people who run our network, never cared about football before. Never cared. Now they're messaging me 100 times a day about it. The last 3 or 4 nights has been a lot to process. I get it, because they've all rolled into one another, haven't they? The Balogun red card, which was, he got sent off because of gravity. I mean, he can't hover. He had to put his leg somewhere. It just so happened that there was a Bosnian leg underneath him. There was no intent. Surely there has to be some intent. And it didn't affect the game, but it's the suspension. The suspension's a horrible thing for him. It's a horrible thing for the team because he is their best forward. They're going to have to replace him with someone not of the same calibre. So there's a knock-on effect to that. The offside, not so much. And what was the other one? There's been so much over that. England
Germany
penalty,
one.
The Harry Kane dive.
Yeah.
Yeah, all sorts of things. The Germany VAR. It's something we've just became accustomed to. So it's odd me seeing people's response to it when I feel like we've been browbeaten by it and it's now just something that happens in this country or across Europe, really. And I get some of it. I don't get others. I could do away with it. I'm an older gentleman. I've watched football for 50 years and it was always fine. We survived. Nothing terrible happened. There was some bad calls. I remember Paul Gascoigne in 1990 crying when he picked up a yellow card in the semi-final. But our lives just went on. Nothing terrible happened. So it is odd, and it's really good to talk to people like yourself about how you feel about it and answering questions. And I've been pushing back with my own NFL analogies because on NFL, the first NFL Sunday in a few months' time, I'm going to be on my keyboard saying, well, if it's near the touchdown line, just give him a touchdown. If it's nearly a first down, just have the first down. So that you can push back with all these things that I'm getting pushed at me. It's just sport, and that's why we love it, isn't it?
Malcolm, we could do an entire show on is it a catch, not a catch for video review for the National Football League. So completely understand it. Hey, let me parlay off of the United States angle here. We now know what their potential quarterfinal opponent could be with Portugal surviving an extra time. Spain, La Roja look unbelievable right now defensively. Yeah. Let me ask you to size up kind of where the Red Devils present problems now without Balogun there for the United States. What do we intend on seeing here with the adjustments that'll happen on Monday night?
Belgium hold no fears. I would not be afraid of Belgium in the slightest. They've been so underwhelming. They beat New Zealand. That's it. The lowest ranked team in the entire tournament, by the way, New Zealand. They failed to beat Egypt, who were okay. They failed to beat Iran, who played okay. And then they failed to beat Senegal inside 90 minutes. They beat Senegal at the end. And by the way, They were clearly the second best team in that. Clearly, for 85 minutes. Belgium hold no fears for me at all. They're old, they're immobile. And the one thing the US have been is dynamic, quick, aggressive, front foot. The Balogun thing is the issue. USA will have to find a goal from somewhere. Now, they've got Ricardo Pepi, who's okay, little step below. They've got Hadji Wright. Maybe Pulisic can come down the middle. I wouldn't be frightened of the Belgians, even a little bit. If USA play on the front foot, I think they can beat them. Belgium are ready to go home. Their time has come. They're gone. So, no, I really fancy the USA. I think they can do a job on them. And the coaching mismatch, by the way, Pochettino against Rudy Garcia. Pochettino will cook something up. I don't know if Rudy Garcia can. So don't underestimate how much difference being very well coached, which the US are currently, that will make a difference too.
Right now, USA is minus $1.20 betting favorite over Belgium on Monday night. We cannot wait for that match, certainly here. We got three today, Malcolm, that we wanted to touch on very quickly. We see that the Aussie is going to be taking on. They're a small favorite, I do believe, here against, small dog against Egypt. Plus $1.25 here for Australia. Egypt minus $1.55 to advance. What do you make of that first match of the day today?
I picked a really simple play on here. I just got Egypt on the money line. By virtue of the fact they are the better football team, this was one of the least complicated games I've looked at the entire tournament. Australia had a bit of a funny tournament because they had a smash and grab against Turkey. They then got battered off the US and then came up against Paraguay where they carved up that 0-0 draw in what was an uncompetitive game. So we haven't learned anything about Australia. The only thing they do is they're very often more than the sum of their parts. So they can do that. Egypt are just a better team, though. The price disparity between some of these games, Switzerland went off yesterday, evens. We saw the USA go off at minus 277. Egypt at plus 150, or plus 135, you're saying there. The draw with Belgium, they beat New Zealand, the draw with Iran. They've got goals in them where Australia haven't. Honestly, this was really, really straightforward. I didn't have to dig into any of the fancy markets. I'm happy with the Egypt money line.
Malcolm, I made the analogy with Dave that what we're about to watch Sunday night at Estadio Azteca with Mexico and England rivals maybe an AFC, NFC championship atmosphere and the stakes on it, obviously, with the berth into the quarterfinal, notwithstanding. These two heavyweights, as far as the fan bases are concerned, are going to be all in on this match. Decipher it in your eyes here, because I know England has had fears about trying to adapt to the altitude. Mexico on home soil, you rarely can go in and defeat them in their own backyard. Where do you find this match and maybe some angles to it as well?
Matt, this is such a good game. I don't know if I'm even good enough to decipher it as the short answer. I've tried about six times so far, and three times I've got Mexico and three times I've got England. So if you ask me again in half an hour, you might get a different answer than the one I'm about to give you. All things being equal, England are by far the better team. If you put a combined 11 out, there's probably 10 England players in there. However, you then factor in Mexico. It's the home advantage. It's the fans. It's the Azteca, probably the greatest football theatre in the world. And the fact that they don't lose at home. Now, I would push back and say because of the confederation they're in, they don't play anyone very good at home. No offense. They get the USA, probably the best team they play. It's then Canada. It's Honduras, San Salvador, Panama. So they don't get to play much at home. I can't get away from the how much better England are nominally. The premium players will step up here. Jude Bellingham, Harry Kane. England are getting quite a lot of stick for relying on those two players, but I think that's what you're supposed to do. That's the idea of having world-class players, is they will go and win you the
Malcolm, unfortunately, we've got to wrap this up here in about 30 seconds, and I believe we might have lost his connection. Because I was just going to ask Jensen how far, if we have Malcolm back, we'll see here. But Jensen, fascinating conversation with Malcolm Bamford right there from the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. And he did say he likes the United States chances, even without Balogun come Monday night here against Belgium. I feel inspired by that if you're an American backer. And I believe, Malcolm, we have you back. Only have about 20 seconds to go. Very quickly, just to wrap this up, Malcolm, really enjoyed the conversation. How far do you realistically think the United States can go?
The USA can beat Belgium. After that, is it Spain? That might be a bridge too far. But you never know. They've got a puncher's chance, is what I'll give you. They've got a puncher's chance. So why not?
All right, hopefully better than, say, puncher's chance than Frank Bruno had years ago against Mike Tyson. Malcolm, that was a fantastic conversation. We look forward to doing that again. We're talking more World Cup soccer next hour right here. It's VSiN by the Books.